New York, Sunday, August 14, 1902. Disappearances, in about a week, of five men, in Buffalo, NY. Early in August, 1895, in the city of Belfast, Ireland, a little girl named Rooney disappeared. Detectives investigated. While they were investigating, a little boy, named Webb, disappeared. Another child disappeared. September 10, disappearance of a boy, aged 7, named Watson. 2 days later, a boy, named Brown, disappeared. See the Irish News, Belfast, September 20. In following issues of this newspaper, no more information is findable. London Daily Mirror, August 5, 1920. Belfast police are in possession of the sensational news that 8 girls, all under 12 years of age, are missing since last Monday, week, from the Nutonards Road, East Belfast. In August, 1869, English newspapers reported disappearances of 13 children, in Cork, Ireland. I take from the Tiverton Times, August 31. It may be that the phenomenon cannot be explained in terms of local kidnappers, because somewhere else, at the same time, children were disappearing. London Daily News, August 31. Excitement in Brussels, where children were disappearing. 5 wild men and a wild girl appeared in Connecticut, about the 1st of January, 1888. See the St. Louis Globe Democrat, January 5, and the New York Times, January 9, 1888. I have records of 6 persons, who, between January 14, 1920, and December 9, 1923, were found wandering in or near the small town of Romford, Essex, England, unable to tell how they got there, or anything else about themselves. I have satisfactorily come upon no case in which somebody has stated that he was walking, say, in a street in New York, and was suddenly seized upon and set down somewhere, say in Siberia, or Romford. I have come upon many cases like that of a man who told that he was walking along Euston Road, London, and but 9 months later, when next he was aware of where he was, found himself working on a farm, in Australia. If human beings ever have been teleported, and, if some mysterious appearances of human beings be considered otherwise unaccountable, an effect of the experience is effacement of memory. There have been mysterious appearances of children in every land. In India, the explanation of appearances of children of an unknown past is that they had been brought up by she-wolves. There have been strange fosterings, young rabbits adopted by cats, and young pigs welcome to strangely foreign founts. But these cases are of maternal necessity, and of unlikely benevolence, and we're asked to believe in benevolent she-wolves. I don't deny that there is, to some degree, benevolence in wolves, cats, human beings, ants, but benevolence is erratic, and not long to be depended upon. Sometimes I am benevolent, myself, but pretty soon get over it. The helplessness of a human infant outlasts the suckling period of a wolf. How long do she-wolves, or any of the rest of us, keep on being unselfish, after nothing's made by unselfishness? For an account of one of the later of the wolf children of India, year 1914, see Nature, 93-566. In The Zoologist, March 12, 87, is an account of a number of them, up to the year 1852. In The Field, November 9, 1895, the story of the wolf child of the day is told by an assistant commissioner, who had seen it. It was a speechless, little animal, about 4 years old. Policemen said that, in a wolf's den, they had found this child, almost devoid of human intelligence. The child grew up and became a policeman. In Human Nature, 7-302, is a story of 2 wolf children that were found at different times, near Agra, northern India. Each was 7 or 8 years old. For a recent case, see the London Observer, December 5, 1926. Hindus had brought 2 wolf children, one aged 2, and the other about 8 years old, to the Midnapuri orphanage. The idea of abandonment of young idiots does not look so plausible, in cases of more than one child. Also, in a case of several children, a she-wolf would seem very graspingly unselfish. The children crawled about on all fours, ate only raw meat, growled, and avoided other inmates of the orphanage. I suppose that they ate only raw meat, because to confirm a theory that was all they got. London Daily Mail, April 6, 1927. Another wolf child boy aged 7 found in a cave, near Allahabad. For an instance that is the latest, at this writing, see the New York Times, July 16, 1927. Elephant youngsters and rhinoceros brats have still to be heard of, but, in the London Morning Post, December 31, 1926, is a story of a tiger child. A leopard boy and a monkey girl are told of, in the London Observer, April 10, 1927. Our data are upon events that have astonished horses and tickled springboks. They have shocked policemen. I have notes upon an outbreak of 10 wild men, who appeared in different parts of England, in that period of extraordinary phenomena, the winter of 1904-5. One of them, of origin that could not be found out, appeared in a street in Cheadle. He was naked. An indignant policeman, trying to hang his overcoat about the man, tried to reason with him, but had the same old trouble that Euclid and Newton and Darwin had, and that everybody else has, when trying to be rational, or when trying, in the inorganic, or scientific, way, to find a base to argue upon. I suppose the argument was something like this. Wasn't he ashamed of himself? Not at all. Some persons might have reasons for being ashamed of themselves, but he had no reason for being ashamed of himself. What's wrong with nakedness? Don't cats and horses and dogs go around without clothes on? But they are clothed with natural, furry protections. Well, Mexican dogs, then. Let somebody else try. Somebody who thinks that, as products of logic, the teachings of astronomy, biology, geology, or anything else are pretty nearly final, though with debatable minor points, to be sure. Try this simple, little problem to start with. Why shouldn't the man walk around naked? One is driven to argue upon the basis of conventionality. But we are living in an existence, which itself may be base, but in which there are not bases. Argue upon the basis of conventionality, and one is open to well-known counterarguments. What is all progress but defiance of conventionality? The policeman, in Euclid's state of desperation, took it as self-evident disgracefulness. Euclid put theorems in bags. He solved problems by encasing some circumstances in an exclusion of whatever interfered with the solution. The policeman of Cheadle adopted the classical method. He dumped the wild man into a sack, which he dragged to the station house. Another of these 10 wild men spoke in a language that nobody had ever heard of before, and carried a book, in which were writings that could not be identified, at Scotland Yard. Like a traveller from far away, he had made sketches of things that he had seen along the roads. At Scotland Yard, it was said of the writings, they are not French, German, Dutch, Italian, Spanish, Hungarian, Turkish. Neither are they Bohemian, Greek, Portuguese, Arabic, Persian, Hebrew, nor Russian. See London newspapers, and the East Anglian Daily Times, January 12, 1905. I have come upon fragments of a case, which I reconstruct. Perhaps in the year 1910, and perhaps not in this year, a Hindu magician teleported a boy from somewhere in England, perhaps from Wimbledon, London, perhaps not. The effect of this treatment was of mental obliteration, of profound hypnosis, or amnesia. The boy could learn, as if starting life anew, but mostly his memory was a void. Later the magician was dying. He repented, and his problem was to restore the boy, perhaps not to his home, but to his native land. He could not tell of the occult transportation, but at first it seemed to him that nobody would believe a story of ordinary kidnapping. It would be a most improbable story, that, in London, a Hindu had kidnapped a boy, and on the way to India had spent weeks aboard a vessel with this boy, without exciting inquiry, and with ability to keep the boy from appealing to other passengers. Still, a story of kidnapping is a story in commonplace terms. No story of ordinary kidnapping could account for the boy's lapsed memory, but at the most some persons would think that some of the circumstances were queer, and would then forget the matter. For fragments of this story, see Lloyd's Sunday News, London, October 17, 1920. Sometime in the year 1917, the Society for the Propagation of the Gospel, in Nepal, India, received a message from a native priest, who was dying, and wanted to tell something. With the priest was a well-grown boy. The priest told that, about the year 1910, in a street in Wimbledon, South London, he had kidnapped this boy. Details of a voyage to India not given. The boy was taken to Gorakhpur, and was given employment in a railway workshop. He could speak a little English, but had no recollection of ever having been in England. This is the account that the Society sent to its London representative, Mrs. Sanderson, Earl's Court, London. A confirmation of the story, by Judge Muir, of Gorakhpur, was sent. Mrs. Sanderson communicated with Scotland Yard. Lloyd's Sunday News, October 24. Boy not yet identified by Scotland Yard. An even more extraordinary development of the story is that quite a number of boys disappeared in Wimbledon, 10 years ago. It is said that the police had no way of tracing the boy, because, in Scotland Yard, all records of missing children were destroyed, after a few years. I have gone through the Wimbledon news, for the year 1910, without finding mention of any missing child. Someone else may take a fancy to the job, for 1909, or 1911. In Thompson's Weekly News, October 23, 1920, there are additional details. It is said that without doubt the boy was an English boy, as told by the priest, his Christian name was Albert.